Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer, the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Shinobu Kato, who is the owner and brewer of New York's own craft sake brewery, Kato Sake Works, in Brooklyn, which opened in 2020, right before the pandemic. And he joined us in episode 189 to discuss his new brewery and the fascinating story of how his well-established corporate career transformed into entrepreneurial sake brewing in New York. And COVID-19 hit his burgeoning business extremely hard, but Shinobu turned the challenges into opportunities to carefully solidify his customer base. And Shinobu is here today to celebrate the successful expansion of his new business, and his new and larger brewery officially opened earlier this month on October 1st, 2023. So today we'll discuss how Shinobu successfully navigated COVID-19, his philosophy of sake making, why sake is appealing to a wide American audience, including cool young generations in Brooklyn neighborhoods, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write to Abby. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Shinobu Kato. Hello, Shinobu. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Akiko-san.
So, congratulations, first of all. And for listeners who have not listened to episode 189, tell us your background, like where you're from, your highly successful corporate career before becoming a sake brewer, and why you decided to make a sake commercially, and so forth.
All right. So your introduction sounded very great. So, you know, maybe more or better than what my real story is.
But I don't think so. But
I was in the corporate side for a long time. So back in Tokyo, where I started my professional career, I worked for, you know, company as a salaryman, and then came to the U.S. 2024 for the grad school, and then after that, I got a job in automotive manufacturing. So I was doing IT for the, you know, automotive in probably close to 10 years. And then during that time, I started home brewing at home, and that was the beginning of my slippery slope on the sake brewer.
Mm. Right. So where were you when you started sake brewing?
I was in Nashville, Tennessee. So I lived there for close to 10 years. And then I had a little bit bigger kitchen than my current kitchen in New York. So I, you know, around that time, all my friends started brewing either beer or wine. And always I had a problem having the access to a decent quality sake in a quantity. So I was like, okay, maybe everybody's making something so I can make sake.
So you opened with Kato Sake Works in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in New York, in 2020. So what is the concept of Kato Sake Works, and what is your mission?
I didn't have any mission. I just started making sake for myself and for my friends. So that was the starting point. You know, I started this as a, out of necessity, but, you know, I've been always having a problem of the access to a good sake. So I was like, okay, this might be a solution. But as I opened the space in Bushwick, what I had in my mind was I wanted to be a local sake producer that people genuinely enjoy. So when I say local, I'm the Bushwick is my hometown now. So I wanted to be a local business in Bushwick, but at the same time, my root is in Tokyo. So whatever I do have a reference to my background. So when I say like a locally enjoyed sake, I wanted to make something that is true to my, you know, native culture, but at the same time, people here in Bushwick can genuinely enjoy, not because it's something Japanese, but just because it's a good local business. So that was my goal.
Right. So it sounds like you have a good product that you can enjoy and you want to share it locally. And in the end, you share the value of this Japanese precious beverage called sake. That's what I want to put it. Okay, so, and as your sake business just started to take off, COVID-19 hit the world. So on reflection, how did the pandemic impact your business? Probably you have pluses and minuses.
Yeah, so it, you know, it shaked our business like almost upside down because we had a soft opening right a week before the shutdown. And then everything that we planned, like grand opening and all those things, needs to be completely revisited, right? While that was a negative side, we were considered as an essential business, so we were allowed to continue operating even, you know, behind the closed door. So that was good because I was so worried that we may need to fully shut down the business, but that was not the case. And looking back, initially I was thinking that, hey, sake is Japanese and the typical, you know, occasion that you enjoy sake is like sushi restaurant, omakase, something like that. So that might be our first step to approach, like, okay, go to Manhattan, go to, you know, sushi omakase restaurant and then ask them to carry our sake. That was a very vague business plan that we had. Well, COVID prevented us for doing anything like that. But at the same time, you know, we had a lot of supports from the local community. And that's what you did during the COVID, that you found a local business and you really wanted to support them. So you just worked for like two blocks and then helped them because you were not able to get onto a subway, right? So we had so many that kind of connections. And that helped us to think that, oh, we have much deeper market in the much closer proximity. And then since then, we pivoted more kind of focusing on the local community than like a little bit bigger New York City market. And that probably helped us to survive the COVID.
Right. Yeah, remember that the last going out opportunity for me before COVID was to a tasting room. And I stopped by after recording. And yes. I visited your place. And after understanding of this whole, the huge impact of the pandemic, I was concerned how you're going to survive, but you beautifully managed to survive. So, yeah, so, and it sounds like you really created the local community of fans. And I think it's going to be a very valuable foundation of your business. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so glad to hear it. All right, so we'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll discuss Shinobu's newly expanded brewery in a cool neighborhood. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live in Brooklyn, New York. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Shinobu Kato, who is the owner and brewer of New York's own craft sake brewery, Kato Sake Works, which opened in 2020, right before the pandemic. He's here today to celebrate the successful expansion of his business. His new and larger brewery officially opened earlier this month on October 1st, 2023. So let's talk about your new brewery. First of all, congratulations on the successful, very successful expansion of your sake brewery. So where is the new brewery located and what kind of neighborhood is it?
Sure. So our new space is located 15 minutes from our old space. So still in Bushwick. The original location was on Morgan stop on L train, while new space is on Jefferson, still on the same L train. So it's just one subway stops away from Manhattan.
Right. And so most of us, probably our listeners, have no idea what kind of neighborhood Jefferson is now, especially even compared to a couple years ago. Jefferson is a new place. So can you describe the neighborhood?
Yeah. I know my explanation doesn't help much, but the Jefferson or Bushwick neighborhood that I live in and in our brewery is reminds me of my whole hometown in Tokyo called Koenji. So it's a very mixture of old residential and commercial and industrial and art community. So there's a lot of like graffitis and small thrift stores and music venues tucked into old local delis and bodegas and restaurants. So I live in this area for 6-7 years now. And, when I walk around, I know most of the businesses and then they know us. And it's a very, warm micro community in a big city.
Right. And then, so when I visited you to celebrate the opening, it was amazing. It was a weekend. And the street was very, very busy and filled with young, beautiful looking, fashionable people. And then I couldn't recognize it. It was not the Jefferson I knew. So do you know how it was transformed that much in recent years?
Yeah, I remember because when I moved to Bushwick like 6-7 years ago, Jefferson was not that busy. Artichoke Pizza on the corner and the KCBC, the beer brewery, but not much else. And now, especially on the weekends and weekends night, it's a kind of destination for younger generation to go out on a party. So that's great.
Right. Like there's a whole sequence of clothing lines and, the secondhand shops, beautiful shops, and with a cafe in the corner. And it is a destination. I was really pleasantly surprised. So, okay. And how did you find the location? It was not easy, right?
Yeah. It took 6 months or more for us to find the right property. But it was just by chance that we exhausted all the list of the vacant spots in the neighborhood, and we are like, okay, we cannot find any more. And then my real estate agent just called me like, hey, Shinobu, do you know the case, the Biabloli KCBC? There's a spot just opened right next to it. You should come right now. So I went there. I met the landlord, and then I was almost like, okay, I can sign this place right now.
Sounds like a destiny. And I heard that location used to be furniture, custom furniture.
Yes. Yeah. So they were making custom built furniture for the like a penthouse in Manhattan or something like that. So it has a lot of like wood dust, sawdust, and then, you know, grease and those kind of things. But now fully renovated as a Blue Valley.
Mm-hmm, right. And of course, it's a high ceiling, of course.
Yes.
For the location, right? Okay, and so how much more production capacity do you have at the new location compared to the original one?
The original one was very, very small. The new batch size is six times bigger than the old space, so we can make six times more sake. And then also we added one more tank. So eventually I think we can go up to 10 times more than what we did in the original space. But that sounds like big, but actually the original location was very small, so it's not that big though.
Right. Okay. So it's been a long, very long and deep 3 year period since you opened the brewery in 2020. So what's your sake making philosophy now? And has anything changed since 2020?
Not really. We've been focusing on making sake more like textbook sake. So, you know, sake has like 1,000 years of history, and all the techniques has been developed and then tested. While what we are doing here is still kind of following the same method and the same, you know, same descriptions on the textbook, but it's hard to follow the textbook sometimes, you know, given the factors like temperature, humidity, you know, all the things that can change as we go. And we are not there yet to feel that we have perfected our basic sake brewing method. So we are still following textbook as much as we can. That being said, you know, it's fun to do some creative stuff here and there. So whenever we have time or extra resources, we try to do things. But at the same time, we are still kind of in a process to perfect the basic model.
Right. I mean, it sounds easy, but there are only 4 ingredients for sake, and then everything except for maybe koji mold, everything is different, right? And also yes. The climate to adjust all those fermentation and the production. So I think you are really challenging yourself very hard, and it's been very successful.
Thank you.
So yeah, and so let's talk about your product. So you have a much bigger, well-equipped new brewery, but you continue making the same.
Yes. Right now, we have 3 flagship products, Juma, Nigori, and Nama. And then also we have yuzu, lemon-infused yuzu, and we have mirin. And we have some other things here and there, but we have not added anything completely new from the old Blue Valley yet. So right now we are focusing on recreating everything that we used to create in a little bit bigger scale. And then again, the size, you know, size matters. And then always there's a challenge as to how to scale. But once we bring everything back here, then that's when we can expand our product portfolio.
Right. Okay, so let's discuss each of your product, your flagship products, Nama, Junmai, and Nigori. Can you go through each
one? Sure. Yeah, so Junmai is a good one to start with. So it's a standard product that is filtered and pasteurized. It's crisp and fruity floral, but not that sweet. And then compared to like a typical sake in the market, our sake is a little bit bolder or like heavier in the body. And then nigori is an unfiltered or like coarsely filtered version of Junmai. So it has a creamier texture and a little bit of richness. That kind of pairs well with like a spicy food. And then we do have a nama, which one is unpasteurized. So most of the sake in the market are pasteurized to make them shelf stable, while this one is untreated. So it has a little more brighter, louder, noisier character. And people like it. Also, I think this one is a good one for the winter sake.
Right. My impression was that all of your sake are very kind of approachable. I can always enjoy any time and almost any kind of food, but it has a very clean, balanced acidity, and I think which makes your sake casual yet elegant at the same time. So I think that's why you have a lot of, younger audience who are not totally the sake connoisseur. And it's just so fun and refreshing to drink. So, yeah, I look forward to more variations in the future, but no rush.
Yeah. Yes.
Right. And another thing, I mean, listeners who want to know more about Shinobu Sake, you can just go to our website, katosakeworks.com, and our sake section. So you have a description, and each sake has a description of sounds like. And so, for example, nama sounds like a tambourine, junmai like keyboard riffs, and nigori like power blast. So what's the idea of the sound associated with the sake?
Yeah, that started as a joke. But when I was making the first label, I wanted to put the tasting notes in the bag, like same way that any wine bottles have one. So I spoke with somebody who used to work at the Brooklyn Brewery, and he was a marketing guy, did all the backside of the Brooklyn Brewery beer cans. And at the same time, he was a musician. So while he was, we are doing together with tasting notes or while eating Roberta's pizzas, he started writing down that, by the way, this sounds like, or tambourine or keyboard riffs or something like that. And I liked it. The reason that I liked it is, for one, it's very personal. So when you read the label saying that this sounds like tambourine, there's no like right or wrong answer, right? But you kind of guess it, and you can picture the scenery that you are drinking that sake. And I want my customers to approach the tasting note in the same way, because even though we put the tasting note saying that, hey, this sake tastes like lychee and green apple, that's not like a right or wrong answer. And then that sometimes intimidates our customers. Like when we ask them, hey, what do you taste? They try to find the right answer, not like their answer. Mm. And then I believe that, sake, how to enjoy sake and how to taste sake is very personal, depending on your background, culture, what kind of food you grew up with, and what you ate this morning. And then those tasting notes that we wrote were just, our experience. And sounds like kind of exemplify that, hey, this, it's okay to come up with something that you just came to your mind. And then the second answer is almost all our team members are musicians except me. So they love this exercise very much. They take this exercise very seriously.
Right, that's fun. That made me think, actually, I tasted it. And it's not a tambourine, it's a drum, whatever. It's a good conversation starter too, maybe.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And it's another element of rice, which is ingredient. So you've been using Carlos rice. since the beginning of your sake business. So, and now Kawase's has become the mainstream rice used to produce craft sake in America. I think it's a fair statement.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what is Kawase rice and what is the history of the rice?
Yeah, so Kawase is a medium grain rice that widely available in the United States. So it's not like a sake specific rice, but it's more like eating rice. So chances are that if you go to like Asian grocery stores and then buy a like sushi rice, probably that's a Kawase rice. I think the history is the Kawase is a hybrid between the Japanese native short grain rice that first wave of immigrants came to the United States brought with them in California. And then, you know, they came probably before the gold rush or, you know, like 100 years ago. They brought rice. They tried to grow rice because that's what they ate. But, you know, climate didn't match. And then eventually somebody in California came up with a way to grow a hybrid using the short grain Japanese rice with a long grain South Carolina native like American rice. And then now it's a most widely available like eating rice. And then I like that history because that's a history of how the Japanese immigrants came to the US and, you know, rejected and then accepted. And then now, you know, everybody eats sushi and ramen kind of thing, you know, like California roll kind of story. And I want our sake to be like that. So it's not like Japan, it's not the United States, but it's the, like, you know, the two cultures coming together kind of thing. And then Kawase is a symbol of that history. So I want to make a good sake using that rice.
Right. I think your style of sake making and your own history is representing the same kind of idea already. So, but, you know, as an ingredient, why do you prefer using Kawase rice?
Other than price?
That's a good point.
Yeah, but this is a widely available rice. And then I think it goes back to our philosophy that I want to make approachable sake in a consistent way. And approachable and consistent are two important things. And of course, you know, we can use expensive rice to make like one of masterpiece of sake, but that's not neither approachable or, you know, or sustainable or consistent. So first, we wanted to come up with a flagship product using the most available rice possible in the United States. And once we can master that, I think after that, we have a room to play around with other ingredients. But that was like our first step.
Mm, right. And more exciting thing is that there are more Japanese traditional sake rice grown in America and more available. So, yeah, I'm sure there are more opportunities for brewers like you and anybody else. But again, it's now there's Yamada Nishiki, which is also the king of sake rice, and it's grown in Arkansas and probably other places. So it is exciting. And so are you interested in any specific variety of rice if it's grown here, like omachi or?
Yeah, definitely. I like omachi. I like sake made with omachi. So I'd love to try that. And also, I want to try some like non-conventional rice. You know, there's a lot of native rice varieties in the U.S. So those are like extreme. You know, we are going away from the traditional sake brewing. But, you know, here we can try like purple rice, black rice, blue rice, those kind of things. There's a lot of, you know, creativities there. Well, as soon as we perfect our process with Kawase, yes, we'll start playing around with other ingredients.
Mm, right. Okay, so keep me posted and then we'll discuss when you're ready. So you have a great tasting room by your new brewery. So Well, first of all, how many seats, like how big is the tasting room? Because I want our listeners to stop by. It's so exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know how many people we can fit. We have a bar counter for 10 stools, and we have probably a seating area for like 20 people or so. And that's as big as our old brewery, including the production space. So for us, it's really big. But maybe if you compare with like typical breweries, we are not that big. So maybe like, you know, a smaller version of the beer brewery is the typical kind of scale that you can think of.
Mm, right. And also the energy is kind of like a casual craft beer brewery tasting room. And it's so lively and it's fun and open feeling.
Thank you.
Yeah. So who is drinking your sake at the tasting room?
It's hard to tell, but people on the street just randomly stopping by. And we have some regulars, but one thing I can tell is the average customers we have here is not the sake connoisseur. Yeah. Awesome. That being said, they are not intimidated either. So they just come here to drink something good and, you know, listen to a good music, enjoy the atmosphere, have a nice conversation with a bartender and going for dinner somewhere or something like that. So it's very, yes, as you said, it's very casual.
Right. So I just heard something I was dreaming about, like sake as just a delicious beverage. And it's just like a glass of craft beer, the same idea. Well, that's nice cocktail. You just have fun, drink and with friends or whoever. And that's what sake, I think, breweries want. Even the traditional sake breweries want that, because at the end of the day, people want to drink good sake or good anything.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing. So that's a great thing happening in Jefferson.
Yeah, at least we have enough sake to serve right now, so that's good.
Right. Yeah. So, besides your tasting room in Brooklyn, where can we taste your sake?
We currently have probably like 40, 50 accounts, including restaurants, bars, and liquor store. But most of them are still concentrated in northern Brooklyn, like Greenpoint, Bushwick, a little bit of the Williamsburg, and a little bit of Manhattan. So still we are kind of approaching this in a very local neighborhood by neighborhood approach.
Mm. Right. Okay. So that's jizake, yes. Local sake idea, which is cool. Okay. And, but do you sell online too, right? You can just order online?
Yes. Yes. As long as you are in New York State, yes, you can order online.
Right. So that's the thing. It's very complicated, but hopefully you're going to cross the state line and it's going to be available widely.
So, eventually, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, so now we have three local sake breweries in New York, namely your place, Kato Sake Works, Brooklyn Kura, that you mentioned earlier, and Dasai Blue, which is the Japanese biggest exporter of sake, Dasai's New York fresh new brewery, just recently opened. So, it's a real serious situation, and the American craft sake is becoming local. So how do you predict the future of sake production in New York and in America?
That's a good question. And then, you know, everybody asks me that question while I'm more focusing on my day-to-day operation in this small neighborhood. So I don't know how much I can tell about the industry itself, but I think, you know, the more players playing locally, producing sake locally, will definitely help. Mm. And, you know, as a consumer, I enjoy traveling and finding a local craft makers and then, you know, go there, right? So now if you come travel to Brooklyn, you have two locations to go, And there's a, you know, another reason to go upstate to enjoy sake in Dasai. So I think this trend continues, and then I hope that this helps overall as an industry. But at the same time, we discussed this before, but sake consumption in the United States is still like tiny, tiny fraction of the entire alcohol consumption, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it will be more fun, I think.
Right, and great thing is that all of you, Kato Sake Works, Fukun Kura, and Dasaibu, they are very, very different personalities. And I mean, now our listeners know who you are and what Kato Sake Works is. But Brooklyn Kura is by two cool American guys. They came to the show twice and discussed real philosophy. And, you know, it's a very, very authentic in a way to respect traditional Japanese sake culture and production. But their mindset is very, very surprisingly open and very solid in execution. And that's why they're really successful. And Dasai is a very solid corporate business, but they're always trying to do something new and fun. And the president, current president, Kazuhiro Sakurai, came to the show earlier. And it's exciting. Like, it's going to be something new and fun. And I think sake drinkers or anything who like good drinks, alcohol, non-alcohol, it doesn't matter. There's going to be interesting beverage culture waiting for us in the very near future. So that's what I'm expecting. And I'm so glad we're able to expand your brewery because you're creating some local sake culture for sure.
Sure, yeah.
All right, so here's an interesting question I had to ask you. So I remember that in episode 189, you shared your inspiring philosophy, which is not to make your life in an autopilot mode. Mm. So could you tell us about it again, and what are your plans and dreams for the future based on this philosophy?
Yeah, I think what we talked last time was, you know, sometimes if you're doing whatever you're doing for your life and you kind of master, or at least you are on track to mastering what you're doing, then eventually the life becomes autopilot, so that, you know, you don't need to be on the cockpit, but, you know, the plane goes to the destination without much effort. And that's something that I fear the most, because you feel so comfortable and then now you are not driving your life, but the life is driving yourself or something like that. So I think I wanted to do everything to avoid being autopilot. I think that's what I explained.
Yes, that's exactly so true. And I was inspired. And you actually take actions like twice already. It's like, wow. Okay. Like, yeah, so...
Now, after 3 years, I'm strongly hoping that if part of my life can be autopilot right now.
Yeah, you're in a roller coaster right now.
Yes, it's been a roller coaster for, past 3 years. And still we don't know where we are going. So, I really appreciate that you introduced my story as a success story, but we don't know yet. If we are still surviving after 3 years and making a great sake, maybe that's a success story. But as of today, we are still in the middle of, like, trying to navigate through the turbulence.
I think it's the accumulation of success every day, right? Rather than you just look back and then, oh, that was a success, which almost never happens in anyone's life. So I think you've been successful every day. And it's always, whenever I talk to you, I get so inspired. So thank you. All right. So where can we find your updates online and on social media?
Please go to katosakeworks.com or Instagram at katosakeworks.
All right. So good luck and keep me posted. And your sake, again, it's just so approachable. And I really enjoy the casual, approachable style and with some elegance definitely behind it. So, well, good luck. And keep me posted.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. And thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for short topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. And Japanese weekly program is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify as a podcast. Engineer is Liam Warner, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.